This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. I'm Chris.
And I'm Gordon.
And I'm neither. I'm Phil.
Oh.
I'm not Chris or Gordon.
Oh, fair enough.
How sensible of you. Otherwise, it would become confusing.
Well, we'd say, good morning, Chris. Good morning, Chris. Hello, Chris. You, Chris, a bit like that film Rhubarb.
Yes.
Where the only word in the whole film was rhubarb.
Rhubarb.
But yes, and it wasn't entertaining.
No, but then again, that's what they used to have to say.
Well, true.
To the people standing on the side. Yeah.
In the background.
The extras.
As I said before, thanks for being with us. This is our little history program. Sometimes history is quite old and ancient. Sometimes...
matches the staff.
Sometimes it's things that have happened in the last 48 hours or something, and we might be wise enough to recognise its history in the making so that we can reflect upon it in a few years' time and think, well, I was there at that particular time, and I know all about that. Some of those things have happened to us all and will continue to happen in the future. Events will be notable and we will remember them.
Or not, in the case of President Trump. On any various week this past year, we could say a senior member of his staff has resigned, and we'd be right.
Or been fired.
Well, that's right.
Yes. But anyhow, that don't denigrate the show that much by mentioning that man's name. Let's keep it up light and bright.
We'll be only talking Trump in the context of a card game.
That's right, yes. Calling it Trump's, yes. Or trumpery. Use the word trumpery, which is I use often.
Yeah.
Or a little one to be a trumpet.
Stop it. We could save those up for later
on.
Oh, look, I am so pleased that we will soon be over Christmas because I'm sick of the carols already.
The only part about Christmas is that I do enjoy some of the music. I have never been a Christmas person. Even as a child, I thought Christmas was so wrong.
His middle name is Humbug.
It was. Because, you see, when I was a child, it was all advertised as snow and little robin red breasts and some holly and some ivy.
In the English countryside.
In the English countryside. And I lived in WA where it was 100 bloody degrees and it was never, ever Christmas.
But at least we've sort of Australianised it with chocolate bilbies.
That's Easter.
Oh, sorry, it's this too.
Excuse me.
It doesn't work at Christmas.
Yeah, they go on sale straight after Christmas.
We have Santa surfing in Bondi, which is lame. We shouldn't try, basically. We don't have winter at Christmas time.
No.
And all the fairy lights around on the houses, they're much the same, aren't they?
And none of them turn out to be real fairies.
No.
There's only fairies in this room.
Well, we have a few fairies in this establishment.
Yeah, but one of my neighbours who is from the subcontinent, I think he's got everything covered. He has the Christmas lights around the thing. He has a Santa in the window and a Buddha in the front garden. I think he's got the lot covered. So I think good on you.
He should have a dreidel or something too for, yes, for Hanukkah.
Yeah.
But anyhow.
But one of the other things that comes along at Christmas time are those charity muggers with their rattly tins.
Yeah, I just walk straight past.
If you stop, you get caught up in a conversation and they're quite likely to ask you for your credit card details or something so they can put you on a bit of a list. Now, Phil, you tell me something about these things.
Well, they were exposed by one of the TV magazine shows. And if you actually read the contract that you're signing, you're giving them, I think in the first 3 years, up to 97% of your funds go to the collection agency, not to the charity.
Mm-hmm.
That varies over time. And the charities argue that we can't afford to hire staff to go out and raise these funds. So they, I guess, do a deal with the devil and end up eventually, if you stay for 10 years as a donor, more of your money will go to the charity.
Mm.
But the guy on the street and his employer are getting your money for a long time. Well,
I donate to charities through the mail, but never on the street.
No, so I give my direct to their bank accounts
and whatever. That's the way to go.
I generally ask if the person is collecting as a volunteer or whether I'm paying their wages.
Mm. Most of the time.
And you get two different results from me.
I guess it sort of makes up some of the things. But, of course, then Melbourne is a world-famous city for the Meyer windows. You know that, don't you?
Well, yeah.
Because they were the very first in the world. Meyer were the very first shop in the world to turn out all their Christmas goodies and put in Christmas windows like they do.
Wow.
They were the first shop.
They've been widely copied because...
But they do it now everywhere.
You get more attention and more custom.
That's right.
Not showing products in the windows.
And this is what Freddie said when he decided to do it. This is Freddie Asmussen way back when. And he said, you will get more people coming into your store by looking in those windows. And he was proven right. And, of course, they copied it in Macy's in New York and places in London and everywhere.
But if you look, each year Apple will release an ad. It can be 2 minutes long. You see it at the movies more than you do on TV.
Mm.
And 9 times out of 10, there's not one Apple product in it. It's just a Christmas story, it's a Christmas setting, or it's a reunion and such things. It's all.
Yeah.
It's extremely American soppy,
yeah.
But it's not hard advertising. It's not buy.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, but it's just beyond. It's gone beyond the pale these days. It's just the cash registers to ring. Yeah, just keep ringing the cash registers.
Well,
up.
It's a continuous message that's coming out. We need your money, or we want your money. Here's an excuse. Excuse number 1, 2, 3. I mean, Christmas will be out of the windows, and they'll be selling
Easter eggs
or hot cross buns.
I can't wait to get some hot cross buns.
But I was reading in the paper the other day that the people are not buying as much as they thought, and there's something like $900 million worth of goods are still in storage that are still there, and they're going to be flooding the market at the end of Christmas, I would think.
Ooh. Yeah. Sale time.
Mm.
Ready for next year.
Yeah, but anyhow...
If I don't want it now, I'm not going to want it then.
It's true. If you enjoy Christmas, go and enjoy it. But to me, it's just another day.
Don't wait for it to snow.
Although it has snowed in Australia on Mount Wellington in Tasmania on a Christmas day.
How wonderful.
Because they were in a... because they're so far further south than us, and Mount Wellington's fairly high, and it has had snow on a Christmas day. Mm. That's about the only place in Australia you would get it.
Not in Uluru?
I don't think so. Uluru would never have snow.
Snowflakes chance in Uluru.
may have done during the last ice age, perhaps, but not in the latest billion years or so.
Not in this ice age.
Yes.
You're listening to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9.
Coming up on the show today, we'll be having some new news from around the world, including comments about a part two of a film that has already been on our screens and entranced a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have to listen to find out which film we're talking about. Oh, yes, we might have to mention Mr. Trump again. Yeah, golly gosh.
Oh, dear.
Later on, we've got a couple of birthdays. Karen Phelps and Anthony Kalia. Not on the same day or on the same year. And in the last little chat, we hope to be talking about the Galapagos Islands and Sir David Attenborough.
Attenborough.
Yes, I keep wanting to say Rabbit Burrow, but that's naughty.
You're not supposed to say that. That's the trouble when you get into the habit of calling people these funny names. When you have to say it right, you never get it right.
But we're going to be spinning around with Kylie in the beginning.
Melbourne's lovable radio station, Joy 94.9.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. time to get out the newspaper cuttings that we've got for you, gentlemen.
Been going hard with my scissors all week. Getting the cuttings.
I hope they're those little plastic safe ones with no pointy ends to the scissors.
Oh, no, no,
Do you remember those from school? Oh, from kinder, you know.
No, we didn't have kinder. We had slates to write on with a bit of chalk or something or other.
They used to hit each other over the head with a club.
Yeah, that's right.
Golly gosh. Now, talk of a film.
There was a wonderful film on that was last year, I think it was, and it was called Call Me By Your Name, written by Andre Aciman. And it was a beautiful film and it came from a beautiful book. I did read the book and I did see the film. But it was so popular that they have asked him to write a sequel to what actually happened to the two men who were fell in love with one another and then went off. One went off to go back to America to be a school teacher or a professor or something or other, or continue with his studies. And the 15 or 16-year-old boy was comforted by his father in the fashion that you felt that the father was saying to him, good on you for doing what I would have loved to have done, sort of thing.
But that they separated, though, didn't they?
Yeah, but they did separate because one had to go back. They had the wonderful time in Rome.
Yeah, and then the boy had explored his love for the other man.
That's right, yes.
Whereas the father
had not.
Is saying, well, yeah, I wish I'd done that,
yeah.
Which was a stunning end to the film, really.
But so now that the film was so successful that both the stars of the movie have asked him to write a sequel, as has the director of the movie. He would like to see a sequel. So it's apparently already written, as the Aciman said. It's done. We've got it all organised, but they're going to be making the film in a few years' time because they want the two stars to age a little bit.
Oh, right. It's not a continuous storyline.
It's going to be they're going to come back together, apparently.
I don't know how long he's going to wait because Armie Hammer has been an attractive man for a long, long time. Yes. And I don't see that changing.
But I don't think...
Young Timothy is so beautiful.
He won't change very much either. He could only probably get a bit more handsome.
Mm. Well, that might be quite a turning point if, in fact, he doesn't mature nicely. At the moment, he probably looks like his mother. But as we've seen with a lot of kids, when they go through puberty and into adulthood...
Well, Timothy's 21.
They change from their looking like their mother to looking like their father.
I don't.
Well, we're discussing this the other day. We're talking about The Flight of the Navigator, which is a Disney movie from, I guess, the 80s. And there's a little 12-year-old boy, Joey Kramer. And I Googled his name last weekend, just wondering what he looks like now. And there was his mugshot from having robbed a bank 2 years ago. Not looking very cute anymore.
But anyway, so there's something we can look forward to seeing.
That'll probably be on Melbourne Queer Film Festival in a couple of years' time, if it's not already laid down for the major cinemas.
Well, they haven't started filming yet, and they won't be starting filming for another couple of years, they say. But it's all done. They've got it all organised to do it. And it's going to be something to look out for. But he's also going to write a book as well. The book will come with the movie.
Yeah.
Just a side note on filming the original. Armie Hammer and Timothy were put out in a field with the director. And the director told them to just make lovey eyes at each other and hug and kiss and roll around in the grass and all this sort of stuff. And then the director went home. He just left them there for the whole day. And they just huggy kisses the whole day.
They got to know one another. That was the point. Yeah.
And it comes across on screen. They're not two straight guys looking like, or two straight actors looking like they're playing gay. There was the look in the eyes that they came up with.
They became so easy and comfortable in their own situations that it came through on the screen that they do obviously enjoy one another's company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good.
As did we.
It'll be interesting to see if that film changes people's perspective or minds or attitudes towards same-sex attractiveness or attraction, whether the age difference is still going to be a problem.
I think that this film is not going to be viewed by the people who really should have seen it, the dinosaurs.
The interesting part about it is that Andre Aciman is an Italian, and he's written that the story is set in the north part of Italy. And in the latest news from Italy, they have just passed a bill in the parliament to make it harder for LGBTIQ people fleeing anti-gay countries.
So, oh, right, because a lot of countries have limits on who can migrate or apply to be a refugee. And there's humanitarian grounds and there's fleeing from war or famine or other things, but you can't flee from, apparently, in the eyes of these Italians, homophobic countries.
Yes, you can't. We'd be somewhere like, say, Iran or Iraq, where it's punishable by death sort of situation. You can't sort of rush off and expect to get a bit of a sanctuary in Italy now, because they're not going to do it.
The Minister for Family, oddly enough, Lorenzo Fontana, stated earlier this year that gay families, quote, don't exist. Now, there's a brick wall that you're up against.
Yes, true too. Of course, we're talking about humanity there, and we just found out today is was the founding of the international human rights movement in all the countries of the world got together to make human rights a main thing for the rest of the society.
And we do quote human rights,
yes,
but I think it's like a lunchtime menu.
Yes, I think
so. There's quite a smorgasbord of options there, and we probably think that we're pretty good on the scale, but you know, you just got to think about people on Nauru and Manus imagine why don't they actually fit the bill.
See, we either don't consider them to be human or consider they have no rights. Yet we signed the document.
We signed the document, but then of course you've got a prime minister that was sort of carrying on about it and doesn't want to see anything done about it,
but we go along with the stated fact of everybody is allowed to have their own opinion, but then we think, oh, what about the poor people in China who seem to be quite comfortable going along with the tide that the masters seem to have imposed on everybody?
Because everything's changing in that country too.
Fast enough. People still disappear. Yeah. And what's the saying? The Chinese police interrogation is no questions, bang, gone. Yeah.
But there is some good news coming out as well, you know.
But you know, just before you start, the Chinese woman who's been arrested in Canada.
Hawaii.
Yeah, over
Huawei's.
Yeah, getting Huawei. All the backwards toward for getting all the funds in. The Chinese want her released immediately.
Yes, naturally.
What about her human rights?
Yeah.
But the good news is that Thailand have made history. They could make history because they have a bill before their parliament to make same-sex marriage legal.
Well, to legally recognise same-sex partnerships. Now, it's not the same thing as marriage.
No, it's not. Connected to the marriage bill, they're bringing in a separate bill to recognise same-sex couples.
Yeah,
but as one of the same-sex people in Thailand pointed out, any other change of government could come in and just throw the whole thing out because it won't affect the rest of the marriage situation in Thailand. But it'd be interesting if they do it because they're
in doing this particular extra bill or extra regulation, they're creating another class of citizen, second class citizens,
sort of second class. Yeah.
It's not. I mean, if it works, it works, because in some ways Thailand is fairly flexible in their attitudes towards gender, and I think the poverty in the country has made them think that sex workers are entitled to earn a dollar if they want to by that means.
So
they've got a slightly different attitude towards relationships and finance and legality than we do in Australia.
There'd be a fairly large gay population in Thailand.
Yeah, well, they have a huge place in places like Pattaya and those places where they have a huge transgendered community as well. And they did a few series on, I think it was Viceland, on SBS's Viceland channel, about the people in Thailand that were the transgendered performers and all the rest of it, and they had Anglo boyfriends, you know.
I've seen that one.
That was very, very clever.
But it's interesting that the actual Thai families don't consider it inappropriate to send off the oldest, prettiest boy or girl to go and earn some money. To support the family.
That's right, yeah.
Well, that's what poverty does, isn't it?
That's another thing that sort of happened just in Australia, actually. There's been a few of those Thai people who have been brought to Australia and were used as sex slaves, which has been another thing that has sort of upset the apple cart as well. The world is changing, which is sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad.
A diverse sound for a diverse community. Joy!
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
Well,
we're going to talk about politics.
Well, I was just going to say, wasn't it an interesting last day of the federal politics in...
It was sort of people lined up at the gate and the clock turned five and everybody
was
out
like,
the door.
They were out there like a rat up a drainpipe. And they, but there was one, I think it was Cory Bernardi in the Senate. He said, I think these bills should have been talked about in a single items and all the rest of it. And he said, as you're not going to do that, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Goodbye. And he just walked out. He wanted to go home to Adelaide.
And the IQ of the room went up 10 points as soon as he walked out.
Oh, no. What's name hadn't left? What, Mrs. One Nation, Pauline Hanson. She won the award yesterday on Insiders. They have an award for, that was Matt Price that used to be on the show many years ago. And he was there for a long, long time. And he used to pick out the funny parts that happened in the year over the year of politics and talk about them. And when he passed away very, very young, he finished up with cancer, I think it was, that took him out. And they've called the Matt Price Award now. And they ran through all the bits, all the funny, stupid things that had happened in politics. And they said, "And here's the winner." And it was Pauline Hanson saying, "I made a decision to say no. And then I decided to change my mind and say yes, but I really meant to say no."
But I never flip-flopped.
Exactly.
And it was just so clever, you know, and you think, and Phil and I were talking about the Houses of Parliament. In the old days, the Senate was constructed to have six members from each state to look after the state's rights. They don't do that anymore. It's something that doesn't matter because... they just follow the party line right the way through.
Or find the craziest bunch of independents and throw them in the mix.
Yeah, and this is the Constitution of Australia was formed with this in mind, so that the states would have a voice rather than be subject to lower house was doing all the time, you know.
But considering that the central government gets all the taxation,
yes,
then they've got to hand it out, so therefore the state governments become the representatives, so the state goes up,
yeah, they have their premier's conference
and these sorts of things, and begs for money, and you've got the infrastructure mob sticking their nose in, and you know, it's almost as though state and federal are doing the same job.
Yeah, but there was the guy that was came from Tasmania, the independent guy from Tasmania.
Wilkie?
No. He's no longer in Parliament. Oh. But he used to stand out for everything until he got what he wanted for Tasmania, and he was one of the few that got for his state what he wanted for them. You know, this is the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, we've often talked about Penny Wong being a clear-thinking person in the right place. Defending our rights, or
she was going
just
off
alerting the population to things that are not quite right.
But she was going off on the last day. She was really tearing into Matthias Cormann.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, she was really having to go at him. And I would
like to do that myself, actually.
Yes, yeah. But then we've got another woman in Parliament that's going to raise a bit of, she's started to raise a little bit of wanting the children off Manus Island, and it's her birthday too.
Well, 14th of December 1957 was born Karen Phelps, a general practitioner doctor, a GP, and she's a politician. She's been a local politician,
yes,
and now she's a representative in a particular seat
in Wentworth, which was held by the Liberals for the whole of the parliamentary life of the Australian Parliament. It's always been a Liberal seat, and of course,
and she won it by a swing of 19%.
She had to get
and
that much.
Who was the outgoing?
He
member?
Was our sort of supposed Prime Minister.
Oh, the Prime Minister of the Week.
The Prime Minister of the Week, yes, the last one. Very quickly, but yeah,
the one had all these wonderful ideas going in as Prime Minister until each and every one of them was shot down by the party, and we ended up with a completely different man.
Yeah.
So Karen Phelps has actually been
she was a catalyst, really.
Well, she was a catalyst, but she was the president of the New South Wales branch of the Australian Medical Association, and then
she became president of the Australian.
Of the Australian, exactly. Mm. And she approached various items of national health concerns, including the Aboriginal community, medical workforce shortage,
and
environmental health, and things like this.
But she's
a good thinker. She's not quite the political line.
No, she's she did say before this election, she said she was a Liberal supporter.
Mm.
And she said, I'll let you know whether I will stand for as an independent. She was speaking on the drum one night.
Yeah.
And about a week later, she must have decided that she was going to stand. And she stood against David Sharma, who was the ambassador to Israel.
Mm.
And Malcolm Turnbull took off to go to New York, and he wasn't going to have anything to do with it. And that got up the noses of his party because they said he should have been there spruiking Sharma and all the rest of it.
The people that just sacked him.
Yeah, they sacked him. They
short memory.
Yeah, you would think he was
going to come and help us, Malcolm.
Yeah, Malcolm, do your best. We've got to get this bloke erected. But, they must think that people that around Australia are stupid, I think. I just don't think that they realise how intelligent the Australian population is.
Hence the 19% swing.
Yeah, but Karen Phillips has actually come from a family that's been in politics. Her mother was a councillor for the Pittwater Council in Sydney and deputy mayor. And her mother was a recipient of the Medal of the Order of Australia. So,
they've been socially aware, very consciously socially aware, you know, and to do the things, the right things, you know.
Karen herself has got the Australian Medal. She's an AM.
Yeah, and she's married to her partner.
She was married and has children of that marriage.
That's right. Yes.
But then she
found out something was better.
She met
yes.
the person
she
of
met Jackie Stricker,
and she tells the story that was on Australian Story a while ago about how they met and what she felt about the whole thing, and they had a marriage in New York about 10 years ago, well before we could do it in Australia, because New York you could get married, but when she came back here, she found that there was not accepted. It wasn't accepted in Australia. No. Their marriage wasn't. And
but were we talking about human rights earlier?
Yeah, something like that.
Does sort of bring that up.
Yeah, just thanks, Phil. doesn't matter, does it?
Karen and her partner, Jackie, got an adopted daughter and were the first same-sex non-kin couple to adopt a child in New South Wales.
Mm. And they had another marriage as well. They got married again in Australia.
They did, yeah.
Yes, they did. They had a second marriage in Australia, so it's all totally legal here in Australia as well. And I say good on them. But she's a woman with great intellect, that woman.
And she was a major part of the Yes campaign for marriage equality.
Marriage equality, yeah. She was up there with a lot of them. And it was interesting. I don't know whether you saw the TV show, but Magda Zabanski was in it as well. And she and Karen Phillips are great mates now, apparently. And it was a lovely program about these two wonderful women. I'm talking about Jackie and Karen, you know, because they both complement one another very, very well.
Mm.
You know, they really do. And it's very interesting to see that these brilliant women that are still around and have always been around, but now they're starting to get noticed.
And they're powerful women.
And they're powerful women too.
Powerful positions. Yeah.
Well, I think it was Karen was named one of the 25 most influential people, lesbians in Australia at the time.
Yeah.
At some stage she was quoted as being that, yeah.
Oh, that was on the same site, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there you are.
Well, we've got two very brilliant women in politics. We've got Penny Wong and we've got Karen Phillips now.
That's right.
Yeah, one in the upper, one in the lower.
On the 13th of December 1982 was born Anthony Kalia.
Yeah, little Anthony.
Well, he is a little bit of a short.
Yeah, he's only small.
He's the same height as me, so you guys just short.
You and I are the same height, so what
are I'm
you?
Normal height. Everybody else is either too tall or too short.
Yeah, I agree with you, Phil.
Yes, so Anthony is not little, and Tiny Tina Arena is not tiny either. And on this subject, Rhonda Birchmore isn't that tall.
About 5 foot.
But she's all legs.
That's true.
And she always wears very high Louis.
Anyway, I'm glad I've cleared that up for Australian population.
Well, we've also got to mention that Anthony Kalia is married to Tim Campbell.
That's
and
right.
They are both Joy members.
I reckon they'd be singing something at the Carols by Candlelight too in the park somewhere.
Oh, I think they
usually
could
do.
Try
and stop them, yes. Yeah. But he's quite good. He's a good entertainer and good luck to him. Yeah,
And a happy very nice boy.
Yeah, and happy birthday to the both of them.
And
one on the 13th, one on the 14th.
And let's hope it doesn't rain on their parade.
I wouldn't think so.
You're on Joy.
I remember when we met, before I was invisible. I thought I'd play it hard to get, pretend I'm unapproachable. But somebody else came along and took all the chances that I missed. Stuck on the sideline, I keep thinking there she goes, falling like.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Take us with you anywhere.
You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
It's amazing what's happened in the world, because a fair while ago there was a guy that was born that decided he wanted to continue with his grandfather's work about the natural world.
Oh, you must be talking about some person who realised that nature was organised.
Yes.
It wasn't random.
No,
it was. There were families of plants and insects and creatures.
And he was named after the capital of the Northern Territory.
Oh, he was not so
They named it after him, you twit.
Oh, well, why? Somebody copied somebody. Mr. Charles Darwin.
Exactly. Yeah, but his father was Erasmus Darwin, and his grandfather was Erasmus Darwin, and that's where Charles got his early training as a botanist and scientist in the field of the natural universe.
Zoonomia, or the laws of organic life.
Mm.
Oh, he's not running that fruit shop down the road from me, is he?
No.
Oh, the organic grocer. They're a weird mob.
Oh, they are indeed. No, sorry. He decided. No, he didn't decide. He was well on the way of explaining biological evolution and natural selection, and but some of these ideas had been sort of rolling around the world already prior to him, but it was they were trying to explain it, and gradually the pieces of the jigsaw came together, and Charles Darwin published his controversial Origin of the Species.
And you know why it was controversial?
Yes, because it had man and the apes one step apart.
No, he was scared that it would upset the Christian people, because it was totally against what they were talking about in the Bible, how the world was made in 7 days.
Oh.
And he just realized it took a lot longer than 7 days.
Yeah.
There was a huge thing about publishing it, so he did hold off for a while
should have published it in the US.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, wouldn't have got published, I reckon, over there.
No, well, yes, it would, because 50% there.
Hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people wouldn't have read it.
Yeah, that's right. But he also, he did a tour of the world. He left England and he came to Australia. He passed through Australia and he called into Sydney on his way to the Galapagos Islands, where, and I found out the other night, that Galapagos Islands are named after the Spanish words for turtles, Galapaga.
And that's where those big monstrous turtles do live.
Mm, they're huge, huge. You're not allowed to ride them now either. There's been a show on the ABC about my family and the Galapagos, and it's very, very interesting. And
it's about the uprising of turtle rights.
Yes, and you can't. But you can't. They went along and they showed on one of the beaches all the plastic that had come up out of the sea, and it was just enormous, all these plastic items. And then the fellow that was with the mother of the two little girls that went with their family, he had a little glass jar, probably a bit like a large Vegemite jar, and it was full of little plastic pebbles of the broken down plastic that had come out of the belly of a turtle.
Oh.
Of a tortoise or something rather. And then there was another one that they had, and it was just showed you what the plastics that are going into the ocean are doing.
Well, if we can take on a project this week, so everybody go into their local fast food outlet, doesn't have to be one or the other, and just ask when they're introducing paper straws.
That's right, yep.
Because the golden arches in the UK are now completely paper on their straws.
Yeah. The Scottish restaurant?
That one, yes.
The Scottish one.
And the city of LA now has banned single-use straws.
Yay.
Good.
So it's not just this little girl up on the northern Queensland coast that's actually doing something about all this plastic.
But it's surprising how much they've been able to pick off the Australian beaches too. You know, it's just...
Mm.
But I tried to use very little plastic. Even when I go into the supermarket, I won't buy stuff wrapped in plastic. Well, like vegetables and stuff. I just use the vegetables and just put them in my basket, loose, take them to the thing and they weigh them and I just take them home. They said, oh, you don't want them in plastic bags? I said, why? They've got skins around them. Just put them in the bag. I'm taking them straight
Bananas
home.
Are pre-wrapped.
Bananas are pre-wrapped. Yeah, I've seen women, one day she got a plastic bag, one of those little plastic bags, and put one banana in it. And I thought, oh, lady, it's covered in a thing that you're going to rip off and throw away anyhow, hopefully in your compost. Yeah.
Yeah. But Charles Darwin made us aware of nature.
Mm.
But also David Attenborough did.
Oh, he's been absolutely amazing about and what he's done.
Tremendous life that he's led so far and is still leading.
Well, he did a conference just a while ago about what we're doing to the world as far as climate change and all the rest goes. But it didn't seem to be a lot of impressed people when he was up there really going off, you know.
No.
And I thought, okay. Well, you're talking to some dinosaurs there, fella.
You know, this change is going to happen or going to have to happen from the bottom because for decades now we've just accepted that we're losing species at an alarming rate, but we're making money. And that, quite frankly, is more important.
Is it?
So, well, obviously the business.
Yeah.
So we need, as we're seeing more and more, the school kids to get up and speak and saying, this is our planet too.
And get told off by politicians that they should be back at school,
Yeah, well, that shows the trouble that we have in Canberra.
It shows the trouble you have everywhere, I think.
Yeah. Well, they're governing for the people making profit today, and that's wrong.
It's always been the way.
So what we can hope for, if we can get back to Charles Darwin, every year we have the Darwin Awards.
Oh, yes.
Which are proof of natural selection in action.
Yeah, there's some...
The people who die in ridiculous situations.
Some of those have been doozies, but the bloke that tied all the balloons to a... He got so many hydrogen balloons and tied them to a park bench type thing he had in his backyard and sat on it and took off in the balloons. Yeah. You know what happened to him, don't you?
Survival of the...
He won the Darwin Idiot of the Year Award, I think.
Now, we've had a couple of Australians basically in the same line of business as David Attenborough.
Mm.
We had our own Harry Butler.
Oh, Harry,
now, born in 1930 and died in 2015, but he was an Australian naturalist and controversial conservationist.
He used to be on the ABC once a week or something, rather doing shows from that quite a while.
But and he's very another one of these Western Australians, sand groper.
Oh, well, we can't help it if we've got sand in our toes.
But he, as a child, he spent a great deal of his time exploring the bush with his Aboriginal friends.
Mm.
Now, that's a link that's quite important to remind ourselves of because the stories that are coming through from the Indigenous peoples make good explanations.
There was an interesting show on the, or interesting bit on the television a while ago about a man that was pointing out that the way the Aboriginals did about the burn-off is about the fires in Queensland. Yeah. And he was saying if they listened to what the Aboriginals do and how they burnt off and when they burnt, these things wouldn't happen.
They burn all the dry, dead stuff when there's plenty of green stuff around to control the burn-off.
It's so logical, though. They've been on their land. Well, they don't own the land. They belong to the land.
Looking after
for,
it.
What was it, 60,000 to 80,000 years.
Yeah.
And have managed to survive without destroying the land.
We've
now,
been
okay, we might have to look at our profits and think a bit, but there's a lesson there, and we're not interested.
Yeah, but that's always been the way. You see that every colonising country that's gone in, like Britain particularly, they nearly died when they went to America and the Indians had to feed them. They nearly died when they came here and the Indigenous people had to show them what to eat.
Well, they couldn't understand why the lawn didn't grow and the white picket fence fell over.
I guess so. It's just amazing.
As well as exploring nature, he was also very ardent in conservation.
Oh, yes.
And reinstatement of natural environment after it had been degraded by farming or by mineral exploration, these sorts of things. Because so often people would just go in with a bulldozer, rip the place apart, leave it alone.
There's going to be one of those in Queensland very shortly. They're going to rip the place apart with a bloody stupid coal mine.
Exactly.
Yeah. If it ever gets going. I don't think it is.
Well, in the words of Joni Mitchell, pave paradise and put up a parking lot.
That's right, yeah. But anyhow, but it's just amazing the way it works. But we gradually do get some sort of answer to these stupid questions that we keep asking, don't we? Sometimes we get the politicians that we want that will answer the thing and sort of do something about it.
Well, they've started to realise that here in Victoria, the general public doesn't approve of the logging of native forests.
That's right, yep.
Because it's such a gold mine of biodiversity.
But they always think that they have all these small towns that are going to be hard done by if they stop their logging industries and all the rest of it. No. Yes. You plant trees and you go into tourism and you make things that people will come and look at your place where you live. How many people in the cities get knocked off of work every week? Nobody worries about them. But anyhow, something will change. But it's, look at the time. It's almost time for us to say goodbye, you know.
All right, but then anyway, we'll catch up with you next week for our...
We'll get on our bus and go home.
And we will. And then over Christmas, New Year, a couple of musical shows gives us a little bit of a time off as well to let our brains rest.
Oh, okay, you then. Mean that thing? Oh, we don't have brains in this place.
Catch up with you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Farewell.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.